Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea 314. Chapter 6. Hasetsu, Part 6. Yuri's free skate does not go well. The first half of the program is fine, especially considering his physical and mental exhaustion. Then, as the music crescendos and he positions himself on the back outside edge of his right foot, something goes wrong. He thinks it may be the way he digs the pick of his left skate into the ice, or the way his tired thighs protest the power he needs, or the way his tense shoulders don't follow the fluid turn of his hips. Whatever it is, the result is this. Yuri's quad toe loop becomes an overshot triple. He does not land in the correct position, and his blade scrapes against the ice. Snow flies messily from the pressure as Yuri tries in vain to stay upright. Then he falls, landing so hard on his palms that pain shoots up hotly from wrist to elbow. He hisses and thinks, "I'm not gonna win." And just like that, the tenuous grasp Yuri had on his nerves is gone. After the fall, the second half of Yuri's free skate is 2 minutes of torture. While his step sequence is impeccable and he has no problems with the spins and spirals, it is the jumps that kill him. With his confidence shaken, he overthinks. And while he thinks, everything from the entry to the execution goes wrong. It is no surprise that Yuri's preoccupation makes him fall again, on the second quad, on the combination, on both his triples. Yuri is bruised, sore, and frustrated to the point of tears by the time his routine ends. He skates off the ice with his shoulders hunched inward. He does not need to see his abysmal score to know he will be coming in last. "You did your best," Minako whispers into his ear when he steps off the rink, wrapping her slender arms around him in a tight hug. There is no kiss and cry here, no division between Yuri and the small crowd that witnessed his failure, so he buries his face into Minako's coat to hide. "I'm so proud of you." "Proud of what?" Yuri thinks, a little meanly. "How many times I fell?" Yuri stays enveloped in Minako's embrace until the other competitor, a 20-year-old professional skater, takes to the ice and performs his free skate. He lands 2 of his 3 quads and all of his combinations. Yuri's throat tightens. It was narcissistic of him to believe that he might win regionals. "Let's go," Yuri tells Minako softly, as the music fades out and the other skater moves into his final position. "I don't want to..." Yuri does not need to finish his sentiment for Minako to pick up on it. She nods in understanding and quietly takes his elbow, walking beside him as they navigate past the crowd and towards the locker rooms. All Yuri wants is to exchange his skates for sneakers, go back to the hotel, and take a hot shower. His defeat has drained him of all the manic, nervous energy that built in him the night before and left him feeling hollow. This is, of course, when someone calls out, "Katsuki Yuri, please stop. We talk?" The masculine voice is obviously foreign, his Japanese choppy and oddly lilting. When Yuri stops and looks up from the red tips of his hard guards, the middle-aged man who approaches them is as unfamiliar as his tone. He has swarthy, complex, thick hair pulled back into a low ponytail and angular facial features, a sharp jaw, a square chin, and an impressive set of eyebrows. Yuri blinks, thrown out of his darkening thoughts by the other man's sudden appearance. "Yes?" Yuri replies cautiously as he glances at Minako. She is assessing the stranger in front of them with a light frown on her face. "How may I help you?" "I am Celestino Cialdini," the man says. He holds out his wide, gloved hand, which Yuri tentatively shakes. "From America. I coach at..." He pauses, obviously searching for the correct word. "At school? Big school." "University?" Yuri supplies. Then, after a beat, he says in English, "College?" "You speak English?" Celestino says. Yuri nods. Like most of his school subjects, English came easily. It helped that Minako, who spent her late adolescence and early adulthood abroad in France, understood the need for Yuri to speak English, and taught him the language alongside dance. Once he had become semi-proficient, she established an English-only rule at her studio. The extra practice had been difficult, but invaluable. "Oh, thank God," Celestino murmurs with a sigh. "My Japanese is limited at best, and my Chinese..." He gestures, an uncertain teeter of his hand. "Well, I admit, outside English and Italian, the most I can do is ask where the airport is. But what can you do? Translators are not cheap, and the university only gives me so much for travel expenses." "A dilemma we are all familiar with," Minako interjects smoothly. She takes a subtle step closer to Celestino, putting herself partly between Yuri and the other man. It is such a natural movement that Yuri wonders if anyone else could tell it was intentional. "Forgive me, but what university did you say you were from?"
"I work with Wayne State in Detroit," he clarifies. "And I apologize. Celestino Cialdini."
He holds out his hand again. Minako, more familiar with the Western gesture, is less hesitant than Yuri was in returning it. "Okukawa Minako," she replies.
"Charmed."
Celestino's grin turns flirtatious. Yuri often forgets just how beautiful Minako is, and his eyes wander across Minako's features. His gaze snags briefly on her soul mark. If he is shocked by its exposure, however, he politely does not show it.
"Are you Yuri's coach?"
"No," Minako, with a shake of her head. "I'm his ballet teacher and a family friend."
"Where are they, then?"
Celestino surveys the crowd behind them, as though expecting to see another person.
"This isn't something I should talk about without them."
"You misunderstand, Mr. Cialdini," says Minako, once her hand curls supportively atop Yuri's shoulder. "There is no one else because Yuri does not have a coach." This statement surprises Celestino. His green eyes widen, his smile slackens, and his expressive eyebrows jump up and touch his widow's peak. His mouth opens and closes, a shocked and soundless gape, before he manages to splutter,
"No coach?"
Yuri's lack of a dedicated coach is a sore spot for him, and the direct mention of it makes Yuri flush. Figure skating is an expensive sport. There are rink memberships and dance lessons, though Yuri is lucky enough to have a reduced rate and unlimited access to both Hasetsu Ice Castle and Minako's ballet studio, as well as travel expenses and costumes, equipment, and equipment maintenance. Yuri pays for roughly half of everything with his winnings, while the other half comes from his parents. He knows that his parents would dig deep and pay for a coach if he asked. He knows that they would use their savings to do so, cut into the thin cushion they need in case there is a bad season at the inn, and he doesn't want to be a financial burden.
"No," Yuri reiterates. "Che cavolo!"
Celestino curses in disbelief. His tone is not scornful like Yuri expects. Instead, it is tinged with awe.
"That is unbelievable."
Yuri frowns in confusion. Next to him, Minako laughs and exclaims, "That's our Yuri, pride and joy of Hasetsu." As always, Yuri blushes at the praise. Minako, Yuko, and Mari all have the bad habit of exaggerating his abilities. He knows that his step sequences are good, his spins and spirals polished to perfection by the long hours he spends on the ice. But his jumps aren't exceptional for his age bracket, and he has yet to land a quad in competition.
"I can see why," Celestino mumbles to himself. "Christ, okay. Okay."
He takes a moment to collect himself. He clears his throat and runs his leather-clad hand over the smooth line of his pulled-back hair. Then, unexpectedly, he asks,
"How old are you? Still in high school?"
16, Yuri says immediately, the answer startled out of him. "I'm a second year."
A year and a half left. Perfect.
Celestino snaps his fingers as though to emphasize his unnamed point.
Do you want to go to college?
The question is as blunt as the previous one, and Yuri blurts out an affirmative without thinking about it. Though no one in his family has gone to university before, all of them opted to work at Utopia instead. It has always seemed like the next logical step for Yuri to take.
And you want to skate?
Demands Celestino. Yes.
Good.
Celestino grins as he pulls a small silver case from the inner pocket of his fashionable wool coat and snaps it open. There are business cards inside the case. He takes one out and hands it to Yuri. It reads, Celestino Cialdini, Figure Skating Coach. In plain black font, on plain white heavyweight paper. The only ornamentation is a stylized DSC in the upper right-hand corner. The D rests atop a skating blade like a boot, while the S and C fall beneath. Detroit Skating Club. Bloomfield Hills, Michigan? Yuri reads the address aloud.
It's a suburb, Celestino explains. About half an hour from Midtown, which is where Wayne State is. That's the college that partners with us, with the DSC, and offers a full scholarship to an incoming student every year. You have good grades?
He's in the 95th percentile, Minako brags. Yuri's embarrassment rises, and somehow he manages to resist the urge to hide his face in his hands. Minako has always acted more an aunt than a teacher, and there are times he wishes she and his mother wouldn't gossip so much. He's even higher in math.
Bene, bene. Celestino's grin grows. Well, you won't qualify for the program until next year, since Wayne State only accepts incoming freshmen. But if it's something that you're interested in, I can guarantee a spot for you. There's more details on our website, and if you have any questions...
Celestino taps the business card still pinched between Yuri's fingers.
You can email me at any time.
Yuri stares at the card and the cleanly printed cialdini@dscclub.com. Beside him, Minako asks Celestino several more questions. Yuri, however, cannot decipher the buzz of her words through the static in his brain. He's too overwhelmed. He just skated one of his worst programs ever, and now here he is, being talked to by a professional coach from America. His frustration at his loss wars with his elation at being approached, and the opposing emotions churn together like nausea in his stomach.
Yuri,
Celestino says, once Minako's curiosity has been temporarily abated. Yuri's eyes flutter open. He doesn't know when he closed them.
I know you didn't do your best today. The timing was off on most of your jumps, especially in the second half.
The sick feeling in Yuri's stomach sharpens. He opens his mouth, to protest or to agree, he does not know. But Celestino holds up a staying hand.
Don't misunderstand me, continues Celestino. Timing is important, of course, but it is a small and manageable problem. You have to know that it is incredible how far you've gotten without a dedicated coach, and I am excited to see how much farther you can go with one. I won't push for an answer, not right now, but I do think the DSC would be a good fit for you. Do you promise to think about it?
Yuri nods. He will not, cannot, process the reality of what is happening to him so quickly. But there is no way he will not obsessively think about the offer once his brain is settled.
Excellent. Celestino beams. Very few skaters have the kind of potential you do, Yuri. You should be proud of that.
He holds out his hand for a final goodbye. Yuri takes it again, then Minako.
It was a pleasure meeting you. I hope to see you both next year.
Celestino flashes one last grin before he leaves as abruptly as he arrived. Yuri watches him go, watches him become blurry as he steps beyond the threshold of Yuri's unaided vision, watches him be swallowed by the chattering crowd, watches him disappear. Only once Celestino is gone can Yuri look down at the small card in his hand and think,
a little helplessly. Did I just get scouted? After Yuri gives Minako Celestino's card for safekeeping, he goes into the locker room and pulls his gym bag out of his temporarily assigned cubby. He does not shower, despite feeling tacky and gross. Ever since he manifested, he is extremely wary of others seeing his mark, of making assumptions, so he takes every precaution to keep it hidden. Instead, Yuri swaps his skates for sneakers and pulls on a loose pair of track pants and an athletic zip-up over his heavily sequined costume. His actions are swift and perfunctory, as he has no room in his crowded brain for the monotony of dressing. "Got everything?" Minako asks when he emerges, taking the small pull-along suitcase where he stores his skates from him. Yuri hums wordlessly and readjusts the strap of his gym bag. "Okay, let's go." It's startlingly bright outside. The late September sun has just passed its midday peak and shines white on the turning leaves. The air outside is just as chilly as the air inside the rink, but it smells sharper, cleaner. Yuri takes a deep breath through his nose as Minako expertly hails a cab. During the short 5-minute ride back to the hotel, Minako does not talk to Yuri about Celestino. It is unlike her to be silent in light of Yuri's success, which the conversation with Celestino definitely was. However, it is not unlike her to be keenly aware of what Yuri needs, and what he needs right now is a quiet chunk of time to sort through the chaotic jumble of his thoughts and feelings, from the high of Celestino's offer to the low of his awful performance. "Want to order room service when you're done with your shower?" Minako asks as they take the elevator up to their room. "My treat." The nausea Yuri experienced before his program is gone and has been replaced by a ravenous hunger. Yuri nods his agreement. Room service sounds infinitely better than going to a restaurant, like they had the previous night. He does not think he could handle the stress of interaction right now, even if it's just telling a server his order. "Knock on the door when you're finished," Minako tells him as they part ways. "Okay?" "Okay," Yuri murmurs back. Once Yuri is safe and alone in his hotel room, he toes out of his shoes and hurries into the bathroom to turn on the water. There is a slowly expanding bubble of dread in his solar plexus that he has been aware of since he left the rink. It is impossible to ignore completely, but he manages it by occupying his hands and stripping out of his clothes. His plain socks, track pants, and jacket are all haphazardly tossed to the tiled floor. His costume, however, is treated with care, cautiously unzipped and immediately placed on the thick, padded hanger left on the hook of the bathroom door. His jockstrap is the last to join the small pile, and, finally naked, Yuri steps beneath the hot shower. "Ugh," he gasps as the spray hits his skin. For a moment, the heat is unbearable, then his body adjusts to the temperature, and the warmth sinks into Yuri's sore muscles and aching bones. He sighs gently, closes his eyes, and immerses himself fully beneath the artificial cascade. The sensation of water falling on him feels unbelievably good, and the sound of it running into the drain is a dense and comforting blanket of white noise. He works on controlling his breathing to help him relax. Inhaling for 5 seconds, holding for 2, and exhaling for 5. Yuri does not know how much time passes as he stands there before he feels steady enough to reach for the shampoo. It could have been a minute, it could have been 10. He lathers his hair twice, first for the worst of the hair product and sweat, and again for the stubborn traces. When he washes his body, he does not bother with a washcloth. He merely grabs the hotel's complimentary soap and runs it over every inch of his pinked skin. As he washes, Yuri also catalogs his bruises. The biggest ones are on either side of his hips, while smaller ones bloom on the thin skin beneath his kneecaps. They are all tender and newly red, but Yuri, who has spent years recovering from falls, knows that they will soon turn purple-blue and yellow-green. They linger for a week before they disappear, and, after they are gone, the only souvenir Yuri will have of this competition is his failure. "Well, what did you expect?" Yuri thinks bitterly as he turns off the shower. Did you really think that you'd make it to the Grand Prix series? Meet the Viktor Nikiforov? Impress him with your skating? Talk to him? Yuri scoffs self-deprecatingly at himself, even as frustrated tears prick at the corners of his eyes. Yeah, as if. In secret truth, Yuri had hoped that he would rank high enough to make it to the first international preliminary. In even sillier truth, he had hoped that he might have the chance to finally meet Viktor, and daydreamed up 1,000 different scenarios for how it might happen. Maybe they would run into each other in the locker rooms. Maybe he would catch Viktor's gaze on the ice. Maybe Viktor would see something special in Yuri's skating and seek him out. Or maybe Viktor would simply see him and stop. And Viktor, talented, beautiful, wonderful Viktor, would smile at him and know. Yuri jerks his hand from his chest and rips his absent gaze from his blurry reflection in the fogged-up mirror. He had been gently knuckling at the center of his soul mark as he thought of Viktor, and the implications of that make guilt join the shame and frustration already churning in Yuri's gut. It's one thing to imagine what it would be like to meet his idol, but it is another thing entirely to imagine that they might be more. Can't even land a stupid quad, Yuri berates himself. He thinks darkly of his flubbed free skate and mutters, or any jump for that matter. Embarrassed and angry, both for his poor skate and his useless imaginings, Yuri aggressively dries himself off with a couple of stiff hotel towels and exits the steamy bathroom. He yanks a pair of sweatpants and a turtleneck out of his suitcase. The sweatpants are new and the fleece lining is still soft, while the long-sleeved turtleneck is worn thin and frayed at the cuffs. Like his shower, being covered from head to toe helps calm Yuri's tumultuous feelings. He does not feel completely stable, since it can take Yuri weeks to shake off losses, but his coping mechanisms are not ineffective. Besides, thinks Yuri, this isn't the first time I've lost, and it certainly won't be the last. And with that strange and self-defeating assurance, Yuri walks over to the door separating his and Minako's rooms and knocks. The end of chapter 6. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea314. Chapter 7. Hasetsu, Part 7. After Yuri fails to qualify for the Grand Prix series, life returns to the same monotonous rhythm. Morning runs, school, evening practice, schoolwork, and sleep. Occasionally, a minor competition or exhibition will shake up the monotony. Yuri wins a majority of them with the same routines he performed at tri-regionals, though at the gentle behest of his part-time coach, he minimizes the two quads in his free skate to triples.
You don't have the right number of rotations, his instructor says. We can continue to practice, of course, but for now I think we should increase your number of combinations and focus on your presentation. That should buff up your points.
Yuri acquiesces, and only the plethora of prizes, the ribbons and trophies, the monetary consolations and the small prestige, help soothe the sting of disappointment. He needs to start landing quads if he wants to further his career, but it seems that no matter how hard he tries, he cannot pass the point he has reached.
You're plateauing, Nishigori says one day as they sit on the benches outside the rink,
boots laced and hard guards on as they patiently wait for open skate to begin. Yuko, already graduated from high school and working full-time at Hasetsu Ice Castle, is helping a small circle of children take their first tentative steps on the ice.
It happens.
Yuri huffs, irritated. He knows that all athletes plateau, and he knows that they often do so multiple times over the course of their careers. But knowing it and experiencing it are two entirely different things.
I've plateaued before, Yuri points out. He sounds whiny and petulant even to himself, but he cannot care. He is tired of his lack of progress.
Then why are you letting it bother you?
Nishigori slaps his broad palm down on Yuri's bouncing knee. It does not hurt, but it does startle, and Yuri jumps in his seat.
You have to let your body catch up to your ambition. Take a break.
Nishigori grins.
You do know what a break is, right?
Yuri frowns at Nishigori's teasing. Though it is good-natured and friendly, it still strikes a nerve. Yuri knows that his body, freshly 17 and nearing the rough end of adolescence, is adjusting to the physical and mental rigors of semi-professional figure skating. But it has been months, and he hasn't completed a quad of any sort. Even the easiest jump, the pick-assisted toe loop, evades him. He feels stuck, stagnant. In his darker moments, Yuri wonders if this new plateau is actually his summit.
I know what a break is, Yuri mutters as he pushes Nishigori's hand off his thigh. Don't be a jerk. Hey now.
Nishigori's self-satisfied grin grows.
I'm just being honest.
Oh, Yuri drawls.
And here I thought you were just being rude.
A year ago, Yuri's smart comment would have prompted Nishigori to scowl and punch Yuri just a little too forcefully in the arm. Now, Nishigori merely laughs and knocks his shoulder companionably against Yuri's. He has become more agreeable in the past year. He is kinder and easier to talk to. Yuko says it's because Nishigori has finally grown up. But Yuri, who has seen the soft way Nishigori presses his fingers to the middle of Yuko's stomach, is not sure age is the only contributing factor.
Seriously, though, Nishigori continues once the mood mellows. Taking care of yourself isn't just about training and eating right. It's also about taking time for yourself, focusing on what's important.
Nishigori's eyes follow Yuko as she glides slowly backwards over the ice, a train of inexperienced kids trailing after her.
Besides, the longer you practice, the more likely you are to make a mistake and hurt yourself. Can you imagine what a disaster that would be?
No. Yuri responds instantly. Though bruises, cuts, and chapped lips are a fact of figure skating, Yuri has never experienced anything worse than a grade 2 ankle strain. The 10 days he had to stay off the ice had been the longest 10 days of his life.
No, I can't.
Then take it easy, Nishigori says.
I'll think about it, says Yuri.
March in Hasetsu is a nebulous time. Snow clings stubbornly to the curbs, while patches of grass brighten along walkways. Birds return to roost in blossoming trees, yet the sun remains a distant and heartless white disk. The thawing air beginning to smell of clean earth and sharp ocean salt. The chilly wind nips. The last of winter tangles with the first of spring, and Yuri, who spends half his life on artificial ice, puts on a coat, but not his gloves, before he leaves for school.
Are you going to be home tonight?
Mari asks, taking a drag of her cigarette. They're sitting side by side in the private entryway as Yuri ties his shoes and Vichan's wagging tail thumps against the floor.
Same as usual, Yuri replies. The rink closes at 9.
Mari exhales, smoke dissipating upwards. She taps the ash from the end into a small ceramic dish she carries in the folds of her work robes and says,
You're not going to celebrate with friends.
Yuri is confused for a moment, thinking of Yuko and Nishigori. He is about to say, But I always meet them at the rink. When he remembers that it is the last day of his second year of high school.
Oh,
Yuri murmurs. He tightens the knots of his laces.
I don't. They're my classmates.
Mari scoffs. What, so they can't be your friends? Yuri frowns at his sister. There are classmates he talks to before the first bell, classmates he sits with during lunch, classmates he exchanges goodbyes with when the day ends,
but he's never spent time with any of them outside of school. Few of his peers understand his dedication to his sport, and those who do spend their time with their own passions. It's a little ironic. His parents had originally enrolled Yuri in figure skating to help him make friends, but it ended up being one of the things that prevented him from deepening acquaintanceships.
I didn't say that. It's just... Yuri shrugs. No one's really interested in skating.
Or, Mari drawls, Viktor Nikiforov. Despite the faint flush that scores his cheeks, Yuri is more annoyed than embarrassed at Mari's pointed remark. He turns away from her, pushes the heel of his palm against his sternum to ease the ache he always feels when Viktor Nikiforov's name comes up, and huffs wordlessly.
Okay, kiddo, okay. I'll stop teasing you about your crush.
Mari laughs, a low rasp, and snubs her cigarette out in the dish by her knee.
Have fun at school.
Before he leaves, Yuri scratches Vichan behind the ears one final time and begrudgingly says goodbye to Mari. He is sure that the last day of school will be sedate and uneventful, and he is right. Exams were completed the previous week, and the busy work his teachers assign is simple. Some teachers don't even bother with a pretense and announce a free period. Predictably, Yuri's classmates break off into their usual cliques and talk about their plans for the 3-week-long break ahead of them. Yuri, who is not as antisocial as Mari accuses of being, joins such a group instead of staying at his desk and rewatching the previous 4 continents free skates on his phone.
I'm going to my grandfather's in Hokkaido, one of the 3 other boys in Yuri's circle says with a grimace. There's still a ton of snow up there, and he always puts me to work. I'm in the prime of my youth. I should be somewhere warm, playing video games and meeting cute girls at the cafe.
You'd need a girl to actually agree to a date first,
a second boy interjects. Yuri and the other boys snort at the slight.
Hey!
Maybe getting it will be easier in Hokkaido.
The second boy continues with a smirk.
At least those girls don't know what a meathead you are. Who knows? You might even meet your soulmate. I bet she's going to be a country girl with a huge pair of... Oof!
The first boy punches the second in the arm, harder than is considered friendly, and they begin to slap and pinch one another over the desk separating them. It's not an uncommon thing. They push each other's buttons in the way close, lifelong friends often do, and no one in the room pays any attention to it.
Man, I wish I got to leave town.
The third member of their group bemoans to Yuri.
I tried to get my parents to let me go to Osaka with my cousin, but they want me to attend cram school the whole time. They keep bringing up early entrance exams, too.
He sighs and rests his cheek in the palm of his hand.
What about your parents? Have they been writing you too?
No. Yuri shakes his head.
I mean, my older sister started working at the onsen right after she finished high school, and I don't think my parents ever said anything to her either.
Lucky, says the other boy, drawing out and doubling up on the first syllable.
I wish my family had a business. I could just skip university altogether and get to it.
Yuri says nothing. He does not mind the inevitability of working at Utopia. The onsen has been in his family for many years, and he likes the traditional, sedate atmosphere of the inn. But he knows that he cannot do so immediately after he graduates high school. First, he must find out how far his skating will take him. If he does not, he knows he will regret it for the rest of his life.
What about you?
The question startles Yuri from his thoughts.
What are you doing over break?
I'm going to practice my quad toe loop,
replies Yuri, truthfully, if not a little cautiously. Mari's earlier sentiment rears its ugly head and makes Yuri wonder if he's boring. He isn't interested in the same things as his peers, isn't interested in destination vacations or studying for exams or fooling around, and he is acutely aware of this fact. I want to be able to land a quad by the time the season starts. Yuri will also be watching the ISU World Championships with Yuko in a couple of weeks, but he doesn't voice this plan. If he does, he knows he'll inevitably wax poetic about Viktor Nikiforov and his stunning bittersweet programs. After Mari's inaccurate assumption that morning, Yuri knows he isn't ready to be teased a second time about his idolization.
You know, I always forget that you figure skate, the other boy murmurs. Aren't you nationally ranked?
Yeah, Yuri says. He competed in the All-Japan Figure Skating Championships in late December and finished 20th with a total score of 152.08. Yuri is keenly aware that if it weren't for his presentation scores, he wouldn't have ranked at all.
I didn't do very well.
Yet before Yuri and the other boy's small side conversation can go into further, more difficult detail, the first half of their group stops roughhousing and pushes the topic back to their break. Yuri is thankful for the change of subject. It has always been strangely hard for him to talk about his skating with people who aren't Yuko, Minako, or his part-time coach. He puts too much of himself into the sport to express himself properly to people who aren't a part of the figure skating world. The rest of the school day passes and ends uneventfully. And less than half an hour after break begins, Yuri is in the locker room of Hasetsu Ice Castle. Nishigori is there. He goes to a different high school than Yuri, and he often beats Yuri to the rink by several minutes.
Hey,
Nishigori greets as Yuri sets his gym bag down on the concrete floor. Their assigned lockers are next to one another, as they have been for several years.
Not celebrating with friends tonight?
No, Yuri says.
Are you?
No.
Nishigori shrugs nonchalantly.
My graduation ceremony is next week, anyway. You still coming?
Wouldn't miss it, says Yuri. He knows that school has always been hard for Nishigori. Nishigori wasn't book smart, and he struggled through most of his classes. His diploma will have been hard-earned.
I'll even wear a tie.
Nishigori snorts, but does not say anything, while Yuri perfunctorily changes out of his school clothes and into the athletic gear he wears on the ice. Over the past year, Yuri has grown several inches and lost a lot of his baby fat. His jawline is sharper, his stomach is flat, and his hips are narrow and trim. He knows he will never be as tall or as muscular as Nishigori, but those things matter less to him now than they once did, and Yuri no longer hesitates when he unbuttons his navy slacks and strips out of his sweater. Yuri's lack of self-consciousness while undressing is also due to his customized Soulmark cover. Minako had bought the first one online for his last birthday. In the 4 months since then, Yuri has amassed a dozen of the same Mark covers in various shades of black, blue, and gray. The cover is a sleeveless top that cuts beneath his ribcage, rises high on his neck, and hides every wild tendril of his Mark. The fabric is tightly woven, lightweight, and moisture-wicking, which is perfect considering that he wears one at all times. When he goes to school, and when he works out, when he skates and when he dances, when he's home and when he goes to bed. The only time Yuri does not wear his cover is when he showers. Once Yuri is done changing, he sits down on the bench next to Nishigori and pulls on his skates. He hunches over to reach his laces, his sternum pressed to his knee.
Yuri, Nishigori says, I want to ask you something.
Yeah? Yuri, who is focused on properly lacing his boots over his high arches, does not quite catch Nishigori's subdued tone.
I need a favor.
Sure, Yuri says as he moves on to his second skate.
What is it?
Nishigori does not answer. Instead, there's a rustling noise, as though Nishigori were shifting the clothes around inside his gym bag. Then silence. It is not until Yuri finishes his task that he looks up and sees the small, unopened black ring box cradled in the broad palm of Nishigori's hand.
The end of Chapter 7. Thank you for listening.
Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea 314. Chapter 8. Hasetsu, Part 8. At Hasetsu Ice Castle, Open Skate, which is the time any member of the public can access the rink, ranges from 2 to 6 on weekdays and 1 to 7 on weekends. Mornings are reserved for beginner's classes for both children and adults, while the last 2 hours of the evening are set aside for advanced practitioners. Like most days, Yuri spends the last half of Open Skate gliding around small children and hand-holding couples. If the rink is crowded, he practices his turns and steps. If the rink is sparse, he practices his spins and spirals. Yuri does not mind either. He gets a good workout either way, and the long familiar motions help calm his mind before he has to practice his jumps. That day, however, Yuri's thoughts refuse to settle. He wants to focus on his pancake spin, but every time he bends his waist and presses his forehead to his ankle, Nishigori's impending proposal surges to the forefront of his mind. He loses his balance and lands hard on his hip 3 times before he gives up. "You okay?" one of his rink mates asks when he switches over to twizzle turns. That looked painful. "I'm fine," Yuri answers, even though he knows that the small ache on his side will become a bruise. "I guess I just have a lot on my mind." Luckily, his rink mate doesn't ask any more questions. She merely nods, dusts the thin layer of snow off her cotton gloves, and returns to the middle of the rink to practice her own spins. She is extraordinarily focused for a middle schooler, and Yuri watches her bend into a layback. Her form is superb. The last half hour of Open Skate drags. Yuri spends most of it weaving between the thin crowd, idly stroking forwards and backwards. Nishigori is not on the ice, waiting in the locker rooms until free skate ends, but Yuko is, helping a couple of younger students work on their crossovers. Like Mari, Yuko had opted to work at her family business, at Hasetsu Ice Castle, when she graduated high school instead of going to college. While she's primarily an instructor for children's classes, she also mans the front desk and helps her parents with the books. Yuri wonders if Yuko wants more for herself than what she has. She has never given any indication of dissatisfaction in all the years that Yuri has known her, but he knows, better than most, that the important things aren't always spoken aloud. "Free skate is over now," a familiar voice says over the PA system, and effectively knocks Yuri from his contemplation. "Please exit the rink. Thank you." He glances at Yuko, who is speaking gently with her students, and then over to an entrance where Nishigori is finally stepping onto the ice. Once Nishigori has gone up to Yuko and pulled her into a quiet conversation, Yuri exits the rink and slaps on his guards. Finally, he grabs the portable boombox from underneath the bench, sets it on the ledge of the rink boards, and waits for Nishigori's signal. It does not take long for Nishigori to turn to Yuri and give him a thumbs up. Yuri gives a thumbs up back, skips to the 4th track on the CD, and watches as Yuko's vague confusion melts into delight. Nishigori offers one of his hands to her, and she takes it with an enormous smile on her face. Maybe this is why she never talked about her future, Yuri thinks, as he watches Yuko and Nishigori glide across the ice. Their movements are simple, yet eerily in tandem. Maybe all she wants, all she wanted, is already here. The hardest thing about Yuko and Nishigori's pair skate is a waist lift, though it is not too difficult given Yuko's petiteness and the enormity of Nishigori's biceps. Nishigori presses a kiss to Yuko's stomach mid-lift, and Yuko laughs brightly. An emotion between embarrassment and envy pricks at Yuri. He has long since discarded his boyhood crush on Yuko, but he still sometimes wishes that his mark was smaller and more discreet. He wants an easy match, like Yuko and Nishigori's, like his mother and father's, not the dramatic match his enormous mark promises. It is a widely held but erroneous belief that the bigger the soul mark is, the more passionate the relationship will be. Not that the size really matters or anything. Yuri reminds himself as he looks away from his friends. He grinds the heel of his palm over his sternum. Or the color, or the location, or the shape. The song, a slow and beautiful piece performed by a string quartet, dwindles. Yuko moves into an ending scratch spin that Nishigori would typically copy. Instead, Nishigori kneels on the ice, pulls the ring box from his pocket, and waits for her to finish. Years ago, Yuri would have been unable to watch an act as emotionally intimate as the proposal that unfolds before him. He would have been mortified to see Yuko stop and gasp in surprise, to see the way she covers her mouth with both hands, to see her face pinch and her shoulders tremble, to see her cry as Nishigori offers her the pretty 3-stone diamond ring. But Yuri at 17 isn't the same person he was at 12, and now he can watch Yuko fling her arms around Nishigori's neck without flinching in embarrassment. Mostly.
Do you think they're ever going to get off the ice?
Yuri's part-time instructor says mirthfully beside him, making Yuri jump. He hadn't noticed the older man.
Yuri says, probably not. Thought so?
His instructor shrugs.
What do you say we give them some privacy and go watch old routines on your phone until they've got it out of their system?
He pauses and glances at the far end of the rink.
Or maybe until the Zamboni driver kicks them off. So, 10 minutes.
Sure, Yuri says. I need to refill my water bottle anyway. Then, with one final glance at Yuko and Nishigori, both of them kneeling on the ice, wrapped up tightly and swaying gently together, Yuri follows his instructor out of the rink and into the common area to wait. Utopia is quiet when Yuri returns from practice. He can hear the low murmur of sound from the television in the main room and the familiar cadence of his mother's voice lilting down the hallway. Vichan, who has been sleeping on the tile floor of the Genkan, greets Yuri with a small yip and an overexcited butt wiggle. Yuri drops his gym bag to scratch the dog behind his ears. Once Vichan has calmed down, Yuri steps out of his shoes, exits the Genkan, and walks to the kitchen. I'm home, Yuri announces when he enters. Mari is seated on a stool next to one of the counters, idly scrolling through her Twitter feed on her phone. Without looking up, she raises an idle hand in greeting and mumbles, "Welcome back," around the unlit cigarette between her teeth. Yuri doesn't mind Mari's half-hearted return. She's been up and working since before dawn broke. "There's some leftover red tuna in the fridge," Mari says as Yuri takes out Vichan's food and a small clean bowl. "We also have about 10,000 pounds of leeks. Does hot pot sound good to you?"
"Sounds great," Yuri replies, setting Vichan's dinner on the floor.
The miniature poodle immediately begins to eat. Unlike some poodles, who ignore their dry kibble in favor of begging for scraps, Vichan likes to devour everything in his path.
"I'll get started on that."
Mari turns off her phone and steps off the stool and stretches, lifting her arms into the air and rolling onto the balls of her feet.
"It'll be done when you finish washing up."
Yuri hums in general acknowledgement and rubs the short curls atop Vichan's tiny head. Vichan, who is absorbed in the meal, does nothing. Then Yuri stands, heads back to the Genkan, picks up his gym bag, and heads upstairs to their family rooms. There's a discreet narrow staircase by the back entrance. It was initially used by staff when Utopia was built in the early 20th century. Now it's only utilized by Yuri, Mari, and their parents. The second floor of the inn is silent, still, and dark. The noises from the main area below are completely muffled, and the only sound is the soft rasp of Yuri's sock-covered feet against the wood of the hallway, and the traditional tatami in his room. He sorts through the contents of his gym bag quickly. He hangs his uniform blazer on the back of his door, tosses the button-up and slacks into the hamper, and then strips, adding his skating gear into the growing pile. All that he wears when he heads to the bathroom are his boxer briefs and his mark cover. Yuri does not look at himself in the mirror after his cover is removed. He avoids his reflection as much as possible, even when his glasses are neatly folded on the sink counter, and the definition in his vision blurs. The shower Yuri takes is quick and perfunctory. Sometimes he tends to linger beneath the spray, swaying gently as the near-scalding water beats down on his head, neck, and upper back. But tonight he is washed, dressed, and downstairs within 10 minutes. He sits in the small personal area his family uses for everything from eating meals to watching television, and absently rubs at the damp strands of his hair with a small towel slung over his shoulders.
"Penny for your thoughts," Mari asks, after she has brought in 2 steaming bowls of Negima Nabe. "You look pensive."
Yuri does not immediately reply. It is a testament to how well Mari understands him that she does not push for an answer. Instead, she lets Yuri eat, slowly gather his scattered thoughts, and eventually say,
"Nishigori proposed to Yuko today."
"Wow." Mari arches her eyebrow, but the action is not done out of surprise.
He wasted no time, did he?
It's a rhetorical question. Romantic soulmates who find each other early tend to marry early. Yuri's parents were the same as Nishigori and Yuko. They were married within a month of Hiroko's graduation, and settled with Mari less than a year later.
"You're not jealous, are you?"
Mari asks after a stretch of time. When Yuri frowns at her, she clarifies,
"You had that crush on Yuko when you were younger. I thought you pretty much transferred all those feelings to that Russian skater."
"I don't have a crush on Viktor Nikiforov," Yuri hisses in protest.
"But you've always played your cards pretty close to your chest."
Mari shrugs.
"You acted super weird after Nishigori and Yuko matched."
Yuri does not know how Mari knows this. Sure, she had complained when he faked being sick to avoid Yuko and Nishigori, but back then she hadn't known why. The small pinprick of curiosity he feels is quickly and easily smothered by the fact that he probably doesn't want to know how she knows.
"They matched in front of me," Yuri says instead, poking at a chunk of red tuna floating in his broth-filled bowl. "It was an accident."
Mari hums wordlessly. Years ago, she might have commented on Yuri's attitude towards soul marks. Now she simply takes a few bites of her own dinner before saying,
"So if you're not jealous, what's got you all twisted up?"
Again, Yuri needs time to articulate his thoughts. And again, Mari waits patiently and quietly for him to do so.
"It's not that I'm jealous," Yuri begins hesitantly. Speaking honestly about his feelings has always been difficult for him, and takes more courage than stepping onto the ice for a performance. "It's just today. Everyone talked about their future, or did something that will affect them for the rest of their lives. A couple of my classmates are going on vacations that are far away. Another said he had to study for college entrance exams. And then Nishigori proposed to Yuko." Yuri digs his teeth into his bottom lip and focuses on the tabletop, the lacquer scratched from years of use. "It's like everyone is moving forward, getting on with their lives, and I'm here, doing the same thing I do every day, and it feels like you're being left behind."
Yuri nods once. Mari sighs gently and sets her wide spoon down in her bowl. The ceramic utensils meets the ceramic dish with a quiet clink.
"I know our situations are dissimilar," begins Mari, "but I felt the same when I was in my last year of high school. Everyone was either leaving Hasetsu to go to college or chase a lifelong dream, and I was still here, living in the town, living in the same house that I had been in my entire life. I was insanely jealous of other people's opportunities, even though I knew I didn't actually want to go to university. School wasn't easy for me."
And as for passions, I mean, I like music, but that's just a hobby. It isn't enough for me to turn into a career.
Yuri glances up at his older sister. She wears the same nonchalant expression that he has come to expect to see, and there is no trace of regret or resentment. Still, he tentatively asks,
"So, you're not mad?"
"No,"
Mari answers. "Besides, most of the people who left Hasetsu after graduation came back. And we're pretty much all doing the same thing. Working during the day, relaxing at night. Sometimes we meet up for drinks. So, I know that it feels like everyone is surpassing you, but that's not really it. Your paths have just been the same for so long that, now that those paths are diverging, it looks like they're ahead of you. But they're not. They're just farther away."
The words make sense, but while Yuri understands them intellectually, understanding them emotionally is another story.
"You can't focus on other people, Yuri," Mari tells him. "You need to focus on what you want to do. Figure skating, going to college, working at the inn, whatever. We'll support you no matter what you decide."
Mari's small speech stays with Yuri for days. He knows that he wants to continue skating, to rise to the international stage, to compete against Viktor Nikiforov. Yet Yuri also knows that he cannot grow if he stays in Hasetsu. Now, more than ever, he needs a dedicated coach. But to get a dedicated coach, he needs money. But to get money, he needs to have a job. But to have a job means he would have to sacrifice practice hours. But to sacrifice practice hours means his skating would suffer. And Yuri, a mediocre skater who can't even land a quad, cannot suffer more than he already does. The end of chapter 8. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.
Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea314. Chapter 9. Hasetsu, Part 9. The first half of Yuri's last spring break passes in a blur. He spends his days following the same routine he would during school. The only significant difference is that he sets the alarm on his phone for 9 instead of 6. The exhausted purple-blue bags beneath his eyes fade incrementally as he catches up on much-needed sleep. Yuri tries not to think about his future. He can feel the stress creeping in on the edge of his awareness, an unrelenting pressure, but he ignores it. Instead, he extends his morning runs by another few miles, tries an unfamiliar dance style in Minako's studio, skates until the redness on his feet deepens to bruises. It is during such a practice that Yuko calls out to him from the concrete side of the rink wall. "Here," Yuko says bluntly when Yuri skates over. She holds out her phone. Her hand shakes.
I'm so sorry, Yuri, but I thought you'd want to know."
Yuri feels a flare of panic in his chest at Yuko's expression. He takes the phone, but doesn't immediately look down. Instead, he asks,
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine," she assures, even as she pushes at Yuri's hand. "Yuri."
Yuri glances down. Yuko's phone is open to an article off one of the many ice skating websites she follows, and even without his glasses, Yuri can clearly see the title.
"The Death of Viktor Nikiforov?"
Dread floods Yuri's chest like a deluge, and makes it hard for him to breathe.
"What?"
Yuri croaks.
"Yuchan, is Viktor..."
"No,"
Yuko interjects, before Yuri's reactionary hysteria can build.
"He's not... He fell, Yuri, and it was bad."
Yuri skips over the first paragraph as quickly as he can. His spoken English is strong, but it still takes him time to decipher the Latin alphabet. He struggles to pick up the name of Victor's home rink in St. Petersburg,
and the list of his accomplishments, his 8 gold medals and his Olympic aspirations, before the chilling phrase, "was carried off the ice," crops up. The paragraph goes past the bottom of the screen. Yuri tries to scroll down to read more, but the phone won't read his touch through the cotton of his gloves. He makes an inarticulate sound of frustration before using his teeth to pull the cuff over and off his hand. It drops to the ground forgotten. Yesterday afternoon, during routine practice, Viktor Nikiforov was reported to have landed incorrectly when he attempted a quadruple lutz. It was horrible. Rinkmate and fellow men's figure skater Georgi Popovich reported, "Viktor's always been good at the technical aspects of the sport. To see him fall? Maybe he didn't have enough speed or enough height or... I don't know. Another witness, Oksana Kunetsov, said, "I didn't see his takeoff, so I can't say what was wrong. I saw him land, though. Jumps are quick, a second or less, and you never get the specifics. You only know if it was good or if it was bad. And this was very bad." Popovich and Kunetsov's disconcertion with Nikiforov's accident echoes throughout the training facility. Nikiforov, who has already experienced an illustrious career despite having recently turned 21, was hoping to win his 2nd consecutive gold medal at Worlds in Los Angeles, California, on March 23rd to 29th. It would also be his 3rd of the 2008-2009 season, following his wins at the Grand Prix Final in Goyang, South Korea, and Europeans in Tallinn, Estonia. Nikiforov could not be reached for comment. His coach Yakov Feltzman released a press statement this morning.
"Viktor's injury is currently being assessed," said Feltzman. "We regret that such an incident occurred so soon before competition, but our focus now is making sure that Viktor makes a full comeback. Russia will make sure that he has the advice and support of the best doctors and physical therapists available."
Though the severity of Nikiforov's injury is still unknown, Feltzman promised to keep the public informed about Nikiforov's health. "We here at Golden Skate, along with the rest of the figure skating community, wish Nikiforov a speedy recovery." Yuri is not aware that he is shaking until Yuko closes her hand around his wrist and gently takes her phone back. Her fingers are surprisingly warm against his exposed skin.
Do you think he's all right?"
Yuri whispers, his gaze glued to the spot where the ice meets the rink wall. He knows that professional athletes experience injury frequently. Most of them are minor, some are bad, and the unfortunate few are career-ending. It is a consequence of pushing one's body to the brink. One day, the body will push back. That it happened to Viktor Nikiforov, to the legendary, to the untouchable, it's incredibly jarring.
"Do you think it's that bad?"
Yuko is quiet for a minute. When she answers, her voice is as small as his was.
"I don't know," she says.
It's a hard truth to swallow. Over the course of the few weeks, Yuri spends as much time hunched over his phone as he does on the ice. He obsessively refreshes various figure skating news outlets, even though there is no new information after Yakov's statement. There are only articles after rehashed articles and forums filled with wild speculation. Every link Yuri opens makes the sick knot in his stomach wind tighter. He knows he cannot correlate Viktor's health to a lack of news, but logic doesn't prevent his imagination and his nervousness from running rampant. The first mention of Viktor after the accident occurs 2 days before Worlds, in an article Yuri sees on icenetwork.com. Yuri doesn't even read the title of the piece. He merely sees Viktor's name and pushes down the laptop's touchpad viciously. Pavel Igorkin to replace Viktor Nikiforov at Worlds. Early this morning, thousands were disappointed when the International Skating Union quietly announced that Viktor Nikiforov's spot at Worlds will be given to Pavel Igorkin. Igorkin, 25, announced his retirement earlier in the season after failing to top Nikiforov's qualification score for Europeans. He He represented Russia in the 2002 Winter Olympics and earned several medals in the ISU championships over the course of his 11-year career. Currently, Agorkin and his family reside in Moscow.
"I am grateful for the opportunity," Agorkin said. "Skating at such a high level of competition is not something I thought I would ever do again. I am saddened that it had to come at a price."
The news of the replacement is not a surprise. 6 days ago, Nikiforov was escorted off the ice of his home rink in St. Petersburg. His injury was initially treated by the rink's on-site nurse before he was transferred to Medim International. Though the extent of his injury is still unknown, there have been unconfirmed rumors that Nikiforov required surgery. Yakov Feltzman, Nikiforov's senior coach, could not be reached for comment.
"We will inform the public of Victor's health as soon as we are able," the skating club Nikiforov belongs to stated yesterday. "We are grateful for all the support and well wishes that we have received."
Since his senior debut in the 2004-05 season, Nikiforov has secured a spot on the podium. The only competition he did not receive a medal at was during the 2006 Winter Olympics. A stellar performance is still widely contested. Despite being in the senior division for only 4.5 seasons, Nikiforov is one of figure skating's most decorated athletes. So what exactly does this injury mean for Nikiforov's career?
"Victor is young," said Agorkin. "This is his first major injury. I do not know the details, but I have seen other skaters return to the ice after terrible accidents, and none of those skaters were as talented or as tenacious as Victor."
Agorkin's reassurances do little to ease the worry caused by Nikiforov's silence. While it is unlikely that Nikiforov's career would end, there is concern that he would not be able to return to his former glory. Yuri stops reading and exits the web browser. It is not a surprise that Victor was replaced. If Victor wasn't well enough to make a public statement, then he wouldn't be well enough to skate. Yet Yuri is still unprepared for the reality of the situation. He feels unsteady. "I wonder if he's doing okay," Yuri thinks as he stares at the poster hanging above his desk. It's several years old, a limited edition print of Victor in a plain white jacket and long gray scarf, his arm wrapped around his poodle Makachin. And there is a small but happy smile on his face. Yuri rubs his aching sternum. He's probably really frustrated. The thought of Victor lying curled up in a hospital bed makes Yuri's eyes burn with sudden, unshed tears. When Yuri sprained his ankle attempting a triple lutz, he hadn't been able to skate for almost 2 weeks. He cannot imagine what it must be like for a professional skater like Victor.
"Get well soon," Yuri tells Victor's poster. "Please."
And in the forgiving darkness of his room, Yuri pretends that Victor hears him. Worlds comes and goes. Neither Agorkin nor the other Russian skater make it to the men's podium, and none of the programs have the same magic as Victor's did. There are good compositions, good choreographies, and good techniques, yet it seems to Yuri that only Victor has the talent to bring all three together flawlessly. "I liked Saobin's performance," Yuko comments when they watch the grainy livestream on Yuko's laptop. Saobin is the last skater in the men's division. "He fumbled that last jump, but not everyone can put a quad that late in their program." The Chinese skater takes gold despite his less than captivating performance. His total score is a full 20 points below what Victor's was the previous year, a fact that makes Yuri's heart flutter with strange pride. Instead of stating this fact out loud, Yuri says, "He had a good step sequence." Yuko bumps her shoulder against Yuri's. "Not as good as yours," she says. Yuri rolls his eyes at her teasing. He knows that his footwork is strong, having originally trained as a dancer underneath Minako, but his skill certainly doesn't outshine a top-tier competitor in the ISU's World Championships. Yuri does not point this out. Instead, he mumbles, "At least Saobin landed a quad." Yuko bumps her shoulder into Yuri's again, this time a little more forcefully. Yuri nearly falls off the bench they're sitting on. "Hey!" Yuri exclaims as he catches himself. "What are you..." "Seeing if I can knock some sense into you, Mr. 20th in all of Japan," she interrupts. "Or have you forgotten that?" Yuri doesn't argue with Yuko. There's no point. She tends to focus on how far Yuri has come rather than how far he is left to go. Yuri may be only 17, but in figure skating, nearly half of the best skaters have already been introduced to the international stage.
"No," Yuri replies, "I haven't."
The day after Worlds, when Yuri steps on the ice, he does not practice his developing short program or the beginning pieces of his free skate. Instead, he thinks of Victor's wins at Goyang and Tallinn and moves. Yuri cannot skate Victor's long program perfectly. He has to downgrade all three of Victor's quads to triples, and he cannot start the lone triple axel from the spread eagle. Yet it is these concessions that allow Yuri to perform the entire program without hesitation. No mistakes are made as he glides across the ice. He is disappointed that Victor was unable to perform at Worlds, and this sad bitterness beneath his breastbone translates well into Victor's theme of regret. Yuri is gasping for breath by the time he finishes. Victor may make his programs look effortless, but in truth, they are usually the most demanding.
"Wow,"
Nishigori comments faintly when Yuri skates over to the rink wall to grab his water bottle.
"That was really good."
Yuri shrugs, too painfully aware that he needs to work on the technical aspects of figure skating to take the compliment.
"It was okay," he murmurs. "Could have been better."
Nishigori's thick eyebrows furrow and his mouth turns into a sharp frown. Yuri recognizes the expression easily. It's the face Nishigori makes when he thinks he's right about something and is prepared to argue. Mentally, Yuri sighs. He doesn't want to fight with Nishigori, especially not when he feels so weirdly drained by Victor's absence. Thankfully, Nishigori's oncoming diatribe is interrupted by a petite bundle of pink crashing into his side. Nishigori grunts, and Yuko, who ran directly into her fiancé's side, all but screeches, "Yuri, you have to see this!" Both Nishigori and Yuri blink at Yuko's proffered phone. There's a video loaded onto it, the screen dark and ready to play. "Seriously, Yuri," Yuko says. Her tone brooks no argument. "Take it!" Yuri takes the phone warily. He remembers what happened last time Yuko all but shoved her phone into his hands, and he is reluctant to be blindsided again, so he asks,
"This isn't more bad news, is it?"
In lieu of reply, Yuko releases a wordless shrill and jabs the play button with an impatient finger. An unfamiliar jingle crashes out of Yuko's phone, accompanied by a logo that Yuri has not seen before. It is written in Cyrillic and dominates the tiny screen. It lasts for about 5 seconds before the image switches to a well-dressed reporter.
"No subtitles?"
Nishigori asks as the reporter begins speaking in indecipherable Russian. "It just came out 30 minutes ago," Yuko says. "Now hush." A minute after the reporter's monologue began, the room they are in explodes into motion and sound. The camera shakes as it tries to focus on a pair of figures entering through a door on the left. Blurry and unfocused, Yuri does not realize what he is looking at until...
"Victor!"
Yuri breathes. Victor is dressed in plain, comfortable clothing, a pair of gray sweatpants, a soft lavender sweater, and unadorned sneakers, and his long hair is piled into a messy bun atop his head. He should look sloppy and unkempt. Instead, he looks artfully rumpled. Indeed, the only thing that detracts from his image are the crutches keeping him upright.
"That's not good," Nishigori comments.
Unused to the crutches, Victor is sitting down at the table that has been set up. Yakov, who has been a step behind Victor the entire time, has to help him sit down. There's a strange tension in the air that is palpable even to Yuri. Then Victor leans forward into the mic, smiles charmingly, and says something that makes everyone laugh.
the knot of worry Yuri has carried since Victor's accident loosens. If Victor is able to make a joke, then his injury might not be so terrible. He looks so tired, Yuko says quietly as the video progresses. Victor had spoken briefly at the beginning, then opened the interview to questions. Though Victor answers each one he receives with his trademark optimism and lightheartedness, Yuri quietly agrees with Yuko.
Well, he probably had surgery since they transferred him to the hospital, interjects Nishigori, and he missed a major competition that he was predicted to win. I know I wouldn't be able to sleep if that happened to me.
Yuri watches Victor closely as he responds. The skin around his eyes and mouth are tight, and his movements are unusually subdued. Halfway through the questions, he even begins to gently rub the highest point of his soul mark, a pale tendril that creeps over the collar of his sweater and up to the left tendon of his throat. It's such an obvious sign of anxiety that Yuri wonders how Victor can maintain his calm facade. Thankfully, Yakov eventually intervenes on Victor's behalf. The noise in the room rises in a sudden cacophony, the reporters shouting over one another. Victor begins to talk into the mic, an action that is cut off by Yakov, who puts a staying hand on Victor's shoulder and murmurs something into his ear. Victor nods, and, with more assistance from Yakov, stands up. Then he tucks the crutches under his armpits, flashes one last hollow smile at the crowd, and hobbles away. Victor Nikiforov announces ACL tear. Less than 48 hours after Russia failed to medal in the 2008-2009 Worlds Competition, Victor Nikiforov held a small press conference at his home rink in St. Petersburg. Nikiforov, who suffered an injury on March 15th, has been silent about his condition since his admission to Medim International.
"You can stop worrying," Victor said to his audience as he sat down. "As you can see, I'm still alive."
Nikiforov's charm was present from the start. He apologized for the quickly called press conference and then calmly proceeded to inform the reporters in attendance of his anterior cruciate ligament, ACL, reconstruction.
"We couldn't perform the surgery immediately," said Nikiforov with a smile. "That was the worst part, I think. The waiting. I was okay with the tests and scans because it meant we were doing something, but once the decision was made to actually have surgery, I had to wait for the swelling to go down. I ended up watching a lot of public television."
One of the most common injuries among athletes, ACL tears vary in severity. Some merely require physical therapy and a knee brace, while others, like Nikiforov's, require invasive surgery. Nikiforov received an autograft from his hamstring tendon. This procedure is preferred by many since the borrowed tissue is unlikely to be rejected.
"The bruise makes it look a lot worse than it feels," joked Nikiforov.
The minimum recovery time for ACL reconstruction is 6 months, which would put Nikiforov's return at the beginning of October. Since the 2009-2010 season begins on July 1st, many were curious about Nikiforov's plans. Nikiforov said that he has no plans to retire. He stated that he will focus on his recovery and return to the ice as quickly as possible.
"Do you think this injury will impact your future performances?"
asked Alexei Mikyaev, a sports journalist for Kommersant magazine.
"No,"
Nikiforov replied without hesitation.
"I am confident I will make a full recovery."
This may be true since reconstructed ACLs have high success rates. The key here is practice. The key here is patience. If proper rehabilitation procedures are not followed, the ligament will become less mobile and cause the bones to rub together. Another problem Nikiforov may face is fear. Traumatic impacts can cause the ACL to re-tear, and, as we have all seen, one bad fall is all it takes. Take previous 1998 Olympic bronze medalist, Mathis Durand, for example. The end of Chapter 9. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Chapter 10.
Hasetsu, Part 10. A month after Victor's injury, when the cherry blossoms bloom, Nishigori and Yuko quietly marry in a small ceremony at Yuri's family inn.
God,
Nishigori swears as he and Yuri wait. They're on the elevated porch on the backside of Utopia, where the building opens up to a small rock garden and a proud sakura tree that twists pink all over the natural gray stones.
I'm so fucking nervous.
Nishigori fiddles with his playing cufflinks. He is dressed in a nice black suit that emphasizes his wide shoulders and powerful thighs. Unlike Yuri's, Nishigori's suit is new. Yuri has worn the same jacket and straight-legged slacks to formal events since he was 14.
Dumb, right?
Nishigori mumbles, as though to justify his nervousness.
I've performed in front of an audience for years, in front of strangers. I never got stage fright. But now, when all I'm gonna do is exchange rings and say I do? He snorts. I'm terrified.
Yuri hums, unable to respond. He is oddly nervous as well, though he cannot tell if it is because of his empathy for Nishigori, or because any sort of formal event gives him anxiety.
I mean, it's just my family, her family, you.
Nishigori's broad hands tremble as his fingers twist and twist and twist his cufflinks around. The fidgeting is so contrary to Nishigori's normally confident character that the need to comfort him wells up inside Yuri. It is not something that Yuri does often or does well, so when he puts a hand on the curve of Nishigori's bicep, he does so stiffly.
She's your soulmate, Yuri says, as it is the deepest comfort he can imagine. You're meant to be.
Yuri does not know how he expects Nishigori to react, but it is definitely not for Nishigori to bark at a laugh. The sudden sharp noise startles Yuri, and his hand jerks away from Nishigori's arm.
Sorry, Nishigori laughs when he sees the shock on Yuri's face. That's just so you, you know, to bring that up.
Yuri's shock becomes confusion. The transition must show plainly because Nishigori laughs again, though this time less harshly.
I know how you feel about soulmates,
Nishigori elaborates. He deliberately taps his stomach, just to the side of his belly button where his mark rests.
And I'm not saying that it's not fate or destiny or whatever, but it's... I don't love Yuko because she's my soulmate. I love Yuko because she's Yuko.
Unsure of Nishigori's distinction, Yuri haltingly says,
But she is your soulmate.
Nishigori is quiet for a moment as he regards Yuri. Then, abruptly, and seemingly non sequitur, he admits,
I was jealous of you.
What? Yuri asks.
Before Yuko and I matched, Nishigori clarifies. Well, I was jealous after, for a while after that, too. You are a much better skater than I am, and Yuko is so proud of you. It felt like all she ever did was talk about you and how good you are. And after we matched, well, not all marks are romantic, and not all matches are good matches. Our dynamic didn't really change, and Yuko... You know she doesn't put a lot of stock in the whole mythos, especially considering that her parents aren't matched.
Yuri blinks. He knew about Yuko's parents, everyone did, but he had not known how Yuko felt about soul marks. Now that he thinks about it, Yuri cannot recall a time outside her match with Nishigori and her manifestation that she spoke about them.
I used to have nightmares that you would manifest with the same mark.
Nishigori chuckles in the easy, self-deprecating way people joke about old fears.
I would dream that we would go to a mark inspector and find out that mine was actually the wrong color, or was smaller on one side, and that you and Yuko were the right match. That's why I was such a dick to you when you manifested. I knew you had this big-ass thing on your chest, but a part of me felt like I needed to see it to be sure. Unconsciously, Yuri presses his palm to his sternum, where the center of his mark is concentrated. It's... Yuri tries to say. It's not... I know, says Nishigori gently. For a while, I thought you might reject your mark, and... Well, Yuko and I talked about what we would do if you wanted to... Nishigori stops to gesture meaningfully between him and Yuri, and it takes a moment for Yuri to realize the implication. When he does, he turns bright red and gasps involuntarily, Oh! Then, after a moment, Yuri says, Oh. Yeah, Nishigori affirms. Yuko and I haven't changed our minds, but we know it's hypothetical. You've always treated your mark with such reverence that we knew you would never accept anyone but your match. So, we never... Nishigori shrugs. In the wake of his confession, Yuri has never been more painfully aware of how much taller and bigger the other man is. Even at 17, Yuri still hasn't hit his final growth spurt. He is short, thin, and bony, with narrow hips and stick-like limbs. His hard-earned muscle is sparse next to Nishigori's power, and his angles look awkward when compared to Yuko's curves. Oh, Yuri says for a third time. I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable, Nishigori assures. Yuri's face, neck, and ears are on fire. I just wanted to... Nishigori heaves a sigh. I don't know what I wanted. Nishigori's fingers are back on his cufflinks, and when Yuri dares to glance at his expression, there's a blush on the flat planes of his face that matches the cherry blossoms and the color of his soul mark. It makes Yuri think of when they were children, when Yuri still struggled not to cry every time he fell, when Nishigori dragged him up from the ice and said a little nastily, "It's not a big deal." There had been pink on Nishigori's cheeks then, too. Thank you, Takeshi, Yuri murmurs as he presses the tips of his fingers to Nishigori's heavy knuckles. The touch is light, more of an impression than a sensation, but the bareness of it still pacifies Nishigori's agitated hands. I'm glad you told me. Their gazes meet. Nishigori's eyes are darker than Yuri's, so brown they're almost black. But in the spring sunlight, Yuri can see the normally invisible edge where Nishigori's iris meets his pupil. Perhaps this is why it is not hard for Yuri to hold Nishigori's stare. Yuri can feel the lingering heat beneath his skin, but it is inconsequential to the warmth in his heart. Yeah, Nishigori says. So am I. Yuri and Nishigori fall into silence after the confession. It's oddly comfortable, given the nature of what has been said. Yuri never thought he would be on the receiving end of such affection, as his short stature, his long hours at the ice skating rink, and his antisocial nature aren't conducive towards popularity. It should unsettle him. It does not. The quiet is interrupted an interminable amount of time later, when Nishigori's second oldest brother, Takeru, taps on the wooden frame of the shoji screen behind them. Hey, he says. His voice is as deep as Nishigori's. We're ready, are you? Next to Yuri, Nishigori inhales, shakes the nervousness from his shoulders, exhales, says, As I'll ever be, and grins when Takeru smirks at him. The ceremony is held in a banquet room on the first floor, where the sliding doors are opened to the new green of spring and the cumulus-dotted blue sky above. Most of the family members have already been seated on metal fold-up chairs that Yuri and Mari arranged that morning. Their murmured conversations come to a halt as Nishigori and Yuko approach from opposite sides of the hallway and meet. Hi, Nishigori whispers,
low enough that Yuri, who trails closely behind Nishigori, has a difficult time hearing it.
You look beautiful.
Yuko is dressed in a traditional shiromuku, a white silk kimono embroidered with white cranes in flight. Her hair is up in an elaborate series of curls and accented with a golden wisteria hairpin that hangs down the side of her face and neck. She is as beautiful as Yuri has ever seen her, but it is the glowing radiance of her smile that outshines everything else. I'm happy, Yuko whispers back. The ceremony itself does not last long, as it is neither religious nor traditional. The eldest Nishigori brother, Takeda, a lawyer who lives in Saga, is the celebrant. His speech is original and unfamiliar, removed from the common ordinations recited in movies and on television shows. The word soulmate is used only once, and given no significance, but that hardly matters when Nishigori and Yuko cannot look away from one another. Yuri's throat constricts when they recite their personalized vows. Nishigori's is about his vague hopes for the future that he hopes they'll build together, while Yuko's is an anecdote about the first time she realized she loved him. It surprises Yuri when Yuko talks about something he remembers. They were children then, before any of them manifested, and Yuri had always thought Yuko had been annoyed with Nishigori during the train ride to one of their competitions. Love, Yuri supposes, is odd like that. When their vows are finished and they exchange rings, Nishigori and Yuko end the ceremony with an unprompted kiss. It is short, tender, and difficult to watch. Yuri almost looks away, but then Nishigori pulls away, bundles Yuko into his burly arms, and lifts her off the ground. She shrieks at the unexpected motion and grips his shoulders. Takeshi! She squeals. Nishigori laughs and spins Yuko around as effortlessly as though they were on the ice. The weighted edge of her shiromuku nearly clips one of their relatives in the face.
All right, all right, Takeda says over the minor chaos. Takeshi, bring your wife over here. I need you to sign this certificate so I can register your marriage with the municipal office.
After the ceremony, the two families migrate into the main area of the inn. Yuko's family is much smaller than Nishigori's. Yuko is an only child, as is her mother, and her father's twin brother is unmarried. Nishigori, on the other hand, is the youngest of four, and in addition to his mother and father, he has three sets of aunts and uncles, several cousins, his maternal grandparents and his paternal grandmother, a sister-in-law, and two nephews. Yuri is the only person in the group who is not related to the newlyweds, by neither blood nor marriage. For a moment, Yuri stands at the threshold and stares at the sea of faces, unsure where he should sit. He is saved from his indecision when a petite hand curls into his own. Come on, Yuri, Yuko encourages. Sit with me and Takeshi. Yuko does not wait for Yuri to respond. She simply tugs him into motion and guides him to the square center table. The navy cushion she sits on has been at Utopia for as long as Yuri can remember.
I didn't say it earlier, Yuri murmurs once he also sits down, arranging his limbs into the smallest and least awkward configuration he can manage. Then he bows his head and says quite formally, Congratulations on your marriage.
Yuri's words are met with silence, and after several painful seconds, Yuri lifts his head to meet Yuko's eyes. He cannot decipher the emotion he sees, nor understand why Yuko sounds a little sad when she says, Oh, Yuri, always so polite. It baffles Yuri, yet before he can begin to parse out the meaning of her words, Nishigori jostles him.
Don't overthink it. Nishigori warns as he plops down on Yuko's right, directly across the table.
His smile is wide and captivating and warm.
We're here to have a good time, and that's it. A good time, Yuri repeats, somewhat cautiously.
He looks between Nishigori and Yuko, then farther out at their families, and then beyond that, to Mari leaning against the door jamb in her maroon work clothes.
Her gaze is far away, but Yuri thinks that, if she caught his stare, she would give a small encouraging nod. So Yuri takes a deep breath, steadies himself and his nerves, says,
"I can do that." "That a boy." Nishigori cheers.
The end of chapter 10. If you enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.